There have been many errors all throughout history, including Christian heresies early on in the church, that claim that good and evil stand as two opposing forces, equal and always at war. This error imagines evil as some positive reality or being, or even that there is an evil God opposed to the good God. But in fact, as St. Augustine, St. Thomas Aquinas, and others helpfully explain, evil is not some positive reality, but instead a privation of good. It is a lack of something, not the presence of something. Even Satan himself, by whom we generally represent pure evil, is not pure and total evil. Something is good at least in the fact that it has its existence from God. So it is not possible for anything existing to be purely evil. Evil is like a parasite or a cancer that can only exist in something else, that is, in goodness. So an evil person is one who has deprived themselves of moral goodness in some way, and an act is evil to the extent that it lacks moral perfection. This is why we can desire and choose something that is evil, even though it's impossible for our will to desire evil itself. Everything we do aims at some good, whether that good is real and properly perceived by us, or it is only an apparent good. When a murderer kills a man to steal his money, obviously the act is gravely evil and sinful, but there is an apparent good that is aimed at, namely gaining that wealth for himself. Unless one is a sociopath or in some other way mentally deranged, he does not choose evil because it is evil. He picks the little good he finds in some action or creature and chooses it over the good that God wills that he choose, and finally over God himself. This is what sin is, turning our back on our Creator and choosing a creature, turning our back on goodness itself and choosing some lesser good. If we know God's law and willfully choose a lesser good that in that instance is opposed to God's law, we not only commit evil, we are culpable for it. This is the necessary flip side of the great dignity we have in being able to freely choose God and become holy by cooperating with God. We can see that evil is a lack rather than a positive presence in reflecting on what original sin is. We might have wondered at some point why we as little babies can be said to be guilty of any sin when we can't be responsible for anything at all. The reason is because when Adam sinned, he lost the original gift of grace with which God endowed him and willed to be given to all of his descendants. But Adam, as head of the human race, had responsibility for the state of our nature and our relationship with God, and he lost that grace not only for himself, but also for all of his descendants. Now our souls are given to us with a big hole in them where grace would have been. This lack or empty space is what original sin is. In a way, every sin we commit contains some empty space, the gap between what our action ought to have been in that particular circumstance, with its goodness which we ought to have willed in obedience to God's law, and what our action was, falling short of that goodness because our will was deficient, obeying our own desires rather than God's. This should put into perspective our whole moral life and our understanding of moral laws. We can tend to view moral precepts as limitations intended to prevent us from enjoying ourselves, but in fact they are guideposts intended to help us achieve true joy and fulfillment, to choose greater goods rather than lesser goods, to choose the Creator rather than creatures. After all, can we pretend that it's rational to think we can find our fulfillment in creatures like man, who is equally a creature like ourselves, or in lower creatures having less dignity than man? It is more rational for us to see that our fulfillment resides in a higher good, the highest good, the source of all goodness. That is what the moral life is about. We can look at the lives of rich and powerful people who have at their fingertips every possible luxury and earthly pleasure and see for certain that our fulfillment is not in such things. In fact, to the extent that we delude ourselves into thinking that we can find happiness in those things, our eventual disappointment is devastating and leads to confusion and depression and despair, convinced that happiness cannot be had in anything or anyone at all. We eventually come to realize that there is an infinite capacity in us for goodness, and we never are fully satisfied with any limited good, whether it be a base pleasure or even the most noble of friends. We desire infinite goodness, and as C.S. Lewis wisely points out, God would not have given us this infinite desire unless there were some infinite good to fulfill it, just like he did not give us hunger without food or thirst without water. Reflecting on God as the infinite good tells us something else about sin. It is an infinite offense. While all sin is evil, we can tell that a sin against a holy person is worse than a sin against a degenerate, that attacking a king or queen is worse than attacking a stranger, that attacking a parent is worse than attacking someone else who is not a relation. That's because in these cases we offend against someone of greater holiness or nobility, or someone to whom greater respect is due. Now, what do we say about the foolishness and wickedness of attacking the infinite good, the source of all things? It is an infinite evil, and it is infinitely stupid. Paraphrasing Lucius Fox from The Dark Knight, You know that God is infinitely powerful and infinitely good and infinitely just, and your plan is to offend this person? So no, our parents and teachers and the church harping on sin is not some browbeating exercise to make us feel guilty and submit and be sad and gloomy. Harping on sin is to remind us how foolish we are to reject the infinite good, which is the only thing that can bring us happiness, and choose the limited good, which can bring us at best a small period of moderate satisfaction, followed by great regret.